And the reality is, we're all chasing the shiny object. We don't necessarily know exactly how it'll manifest or what the ROI will look like, but we know we've got to do something. And so typically, at least at Beeline, we've got an internal and an external focus on AI. We're a bit more circumspect maybe than others because we're not just going to chase the shiny object, and we're dealing with personal information, right? PII. So we've got to be very careful. But what I do see is organizations, including ours, don't know what we don't know. So we're seeking talent outside the organization, and there's a dearth of that talent.
This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action, with host Armon Shrocki. Each week, Armon will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scale. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curve.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Hello, welcome to another episode of SaaS Scaled. I'm pleased to have a guest who has a lot of experience, international, many years in the company. So we look forward to really hearing great stories from Doc. And please introduce yourself if you could, and then tell us a little bit about your amazing company.
Thank you very much. And thanks for having us. Really, really appreciate it. Great to be with you. Hello, everybody. My name is Doug Leiby. I'm the CEO of a company called Beeline. I've been with the organization for 25 years. And in essence, Beeline is what we call the extended workforce platform, which probably doesn't mean a lot to most of you. So I'll just break it down and think about a SaaS solution that sits in between the global Fortune 2000 and then all the ways external, not full-time, but all external talent would make its way into the enterprise. I think a lot of people are surprised to know that many of the big names that they're familiar with, that they shop at, et cetera, or bank at, it's not uncommon for these organizations to spend billions of dollars on what we call the variable workforce, the contingent workforce, some of that's gig, independent contractors. So again, think of all the people that touch an organization that are not full-time. They basically are typically sourced and managed through Beeline at a global level. So that's the organization, that's me.
Fantastic. And may I ask, how did you select or choose the name?
Well, I actually didn't, and it's a funny story. Pardon me. It was a brainchild. Beeline was a brainchild that evolved in Y2K from a gentleman who's running a large staffing company, Tim Payne. He's running the Modus company, which is a bunch of staffing firms at the time. And he realized that there was a fair degree of discontent from buyers because of what had happened to the bill rates, meaning they'd gone up precipitously when the demand for IT talent in particular was at its peak right before Y2K. So Tim had this vision of creating a platform where he could level the playing field and make all the staffing firms basically compete for business. And he chose to call it Beeline. And I came on shortly thereafter, and I'd asked the marketing person. Well, first I asked if I could change the name because I didn't love it. I do love it today. But they said, gosh, no, that's the CEO's brainchild. And I said, well, tell me more. And he was driving. There's actually a highway in Orlando to the coast here in Florida that's called the Beeline. It's the 528. But that actually wasn't the origin. He was driving downtown, and there was a bunch of detours, and somebody had put a sign up that said to get to whatever road he's trying to get to, the Beeline. So Tim called our head of marketing at the time and said, I've got the perfect name. It's Beeline because it's the quickest route from point A to point B. And so when I came on, I was running product management. I didn't even know what that was, to be honest with you. But I sat down with Tim and I said, you know, I'm not sure about the name. And he said, well, just go with it for a while. And then, you know, we only had a couple of customers back then. And then as we started to get some volume, he came out and he said, listen, if you want to change the name, you can. And I said, well, now I can't. We have brand equity and people know who we are. So, and of course, I love it now and I'm very fond of it. But that's the origin of the name.
Fantastic. And you have been, you just told me that you have been with the company for so long, and so you know inside and out, and you have been leading the company for a long time as well. And I wonder if you have seen the same kind of, you know, would say positioning, the same way that you position the company today as you were positioning the company 10 years ago, and how the trend is helping you. Because I have to believe that the trend is upward toward actually companies, you know, increasingly they need to really bring people per project. And it's definitely, you know, based on my personal observation, not any data I have, but it seems to be increasing.
Armin, you're spot on. I mean, gosh, when I started, it was all about cost savings, again, because of Y2K. So we'd go into organizations and then we'd level the playing field and we make the staffing firms compete, and that would drive the rates down. But the pendulum started to shift more towards compliance. And I think back in the day, they used to call it staff augmentation, because quite literally you were just augmenting your staff. But that's changed dramatically. I mean, the extended workforce, and that's what I'm going to refer to it again, anybody who's not full-time. When you think about the composite of that workforce, sure, it can be contractors through staffing firms. It can be independent contractors. It can be statement of work or milestone-based. So one of the big four come in and they do a project for you. That's still not your full-time group, right? But that's an outsourced project. It could be gig economy type people, for example, like coming in to take photographs for executive headshots. It could be security. It could be cafeteria workers. So there's this wide swath of talent. And I'm very specific in the word talent, because they're people with great skills that organizations leverage that are not typically first of mind. And so to your question, in terms of what's happening with the industry, there's a couple of things. One, the CFO, the office of the CFO is really appreciating the variable workforce, because he or she can start to temper up or to govern or down that spend, right? So when you have big projects and capital expenditures, you bring the people in, but they're not getting the benefits, and you can cease operations when you need to. But there's also social aspects happening. For example, Generation Z. Gen Z is all about, well, I hate broad statements like that, but much of what Gen Z is about is purpose of work, community, doing good for the world. And so it's not uncommon for them to want to come into an organization, even here at Beeline, and want to get their stripes, right? Go get proficient in a skill set for 3 or 4 years and then bounce somewhere else. So to give you a little bit more specificity, we in the industry look at the percentage of external workers in an organization. And when I started this 25 years ago, it was probably in the high teens. And now estimates from staffing industry analysts would tell you that on average, a company's workforce is comprised of about 40 to 45% of external workers. And that's been increasing.
Wow. Do you see in particular verticals, for example, that is even more? And maybe some verticals, I don't know, let's guess, healthcare is really more kind of, or it's, you guys see everywhere this trend, it continues.
It's a great question. We see it everywhere, because I often get that question, what verticals do you focus on? And the reality is, you know, we have different solutions, but if you have 20, 30 external workers, it probably makes sense to put some rigor and governance in place. And so, yes, healthcare does a lot with per diem nurses and travel nurses, and that spike during COVID goes down, but there's still a real need for that, and there's solutions in place for that. But we're across the gamut. I mean, financial services, IT is obviously a big area, but retail, hospitality, I mean, you name it, everybody's using contingent labor or statement of work labor in some method.
Do you foresee, based on what we see now with Gen AI in particular, that trend is going to change in one way or the other, because AI is coming? And you may say, well, it's not impacted the job market yet, but nonetheless, AI itself, maybe people, you know that expertise, wanted to really work with different projects. How do you see those, you know, that trend, AI trend, is changing what you guys do?
Yeah, it's a question I get frequently, especially the one around, is it replacing jobs? And I think the reality is, to some extent, it's definitely replacing tasks, right? But like, let's be honest, we still don't know what we don't know. So the pundits are saying it's going to eliminate X jobs, but it's going to create Y. Like, who actually knows? But to answer your question more specifically, I could tell you what we're experiencing at Beeline and then what I'm seeing with my clients. Mm-hmm. And the reality is, we're all chasing the shiny object. We don't necessarily know exactly how it'll manifest or what the ROI will look like, but we know we've got to do something. And so typically, at least at Beeline, we've got an internal and an external focus on AI. we're a bit more circumspect maybe than others because we're not just going to chase the shiny object, and we're dealing with personal information, right? PII. So we've got to be very careful. But what I do see is organizations, including ours, don't know what we don't know. So we're seeking talent outside the organization, and there's a dearth of that talent. So certainly we're seeing a spike in, and not just AI, but cyber and some of these more cutting edge technology sectors or verticals. But I 100% are seeing an influx in requisitions looking for that type of talent. We still have a supply issue. So I think it's going to continue to be something that plagues all of us.
Makes sense. And you guys operate internationally, and you are, you know, you have a good presence in many countries. When did you start to grow internationally? And my guess is that probably you started in the US, and at one point you decided now we can expand this service and go international.
Yeah, we were actually pulled there back in the day. Merrill Lynch was one of our first clients. And so and back in those days, you would just go in and address IT, again, because of the wage issues that I shared with you about Y2K. But as you can appreciate, a lot of IT had been sent offshore. And so Merrill Lynch had talked about one of the big problems was onshore-offshore rates. So your resource might be in New York City for 4 months, but then he goes to India, but the rates don't change. And it wasn't as if they were acting nefariously. There just wasn't a mechanism in place and people were busy. So enter SaaS solutions where you can monitor some of that, and we could instantly change the rates and create a lot of savings. So the truth of the matter is, companies like Merrill Lynch and JPMorgan Chase moved us to India, which was our first foray. And then, of course, a lot of them have, especially in financial services, operations in the United Kingdom. So that was the second area, Canada. That was kind of a natural progression. But then what you find is these multinationals are in many, many different countries. While they may not have headquarters there, they have a lot of talent that they're gleaning and utilizing in all these different areas. So it started to expand first globally. And then the product solutions that expanded in terms of the statement of work or the milestone base that I was talking about a little bit earlier. So today, I think we're in over 68 countries.
Wow, that's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And when you look at, you know, the 5 years down the road and you see, you know, some other expansions, it might be geographical, it might be, you know, maybe expanding into some domains that you are not working today. It might be even offering a different type of, you know, services. Where do you see, you know, you leading toward?
Yeah, I'm a little bit embarrassed to tell you, ours is a lethargic, somewhat reticent industry. So while I've been doing this for 25 years, there is still a lot of untapped functionality within our solution set that the clients are taking advantage of. And that's not a knock on them. Maybe it's a little bit of a knock on them. But the reality is, you know, when you think about who manages the external workforce, it's not one group. It's all over the organization. And so kind of the easiest place to go is to get your arms around the contract labor through staffing firms. But all the statement of work, that could be the marketing group, it could be the legal group, and trying to herd those cats. And frankly, some people don't want it because it puts a spotlight on behavior, right? So we've been facing this for years. And I'm very, very focused on the fact that, pardon me, at the end of the day, the responsible organization looks at talent as talent as talent, no matter how you pay the government or how you characterize them, et cetera. And so what you find is there's still a fair degree of rogue spend in the enterprise today, meaning they don't know exactly where these resources are or what they're spending for them. So for me, job one is get them all in one place, and then we can ensure that they're compliant. We can look at the cost structure, and then we can look at sourcing strategies, of which many have evolved. So I wish I could give you this really elucidating, super shiny object of the next 5 years, but what I've been very vocal. My when I get on the stump, it's like, guys, we've had this opportunity for the last 20 years. We still have got to get to ground zero. And then there's some really neat stuff. And then I can share with you what I think that the more progressive organizations can do. You know, we're hearing a lot about agents will be like workers. How do we track agents? Okay, tracking them's not probably too difficult, but how do we look at their output versus humans, and how do we start modeling? Because what I'm really most focused on is this notion of workforce optimization. So if I have something produced, whether that's a product or a service, typically I'm using people, and the world is changing. But today I don't know, do I go full-time? Do I do a hybrid model of full-time and non-full-time? Do I just go external? Or now do I start looking to agentic workers, right? So the world is somewhat complex, but the speed at which we're starting to learn, especially through AI, is accelerating because we have a massive amount of data, as you can imagine. over $1 trillion to spend and sit within Beeline. So in essence, we know who you're hiring, when you're hiring, how you're hiring, and why. So if we're able to take that data and parlay that into better modeling, we can start to get a sense of, okay, for this type of project in this geography, these are two or three models we should be looking at from a labor perspective. And then, you know, you try one and you tweak the data, et cetera. But so for me, that's the nirvana that I think about in 5 years or so. But the industry is still a bit slow and reticent to get everybody in one place. And when they do, then we can start to unleash some of the incredible power that already exists in solutions such as ours, and that which is on the forefront of artificial intelligence and MLM.
As probably both of us travel, you know, a lot from state to state, probably we have observed the reality that there are many talents maybe in one state and they're okay to relocate or temporarily or even permanently.
Yeah.
But some states, you know, they need a lot of talents that they cannot find within that geographically, you know, in that area or some other. So how does your platform either today or in the future would help these people to have a better sense and get some gain some insight that where the positions and opportunities are if they are flexible to relocate? And sometimes, honestly, they even welcome moving to another place and, you know, starting something exciting.
Yeah, thanks for that, because it's such a good question. I mean, the reality was up until COVID, for the most part, what we saw, certainly you had remote workers, especially in IT and some of the other categories, but for the most part, we're all accustomed to coming into one location, and therefore we would source talent from that location. Mm-hmm. And then COVID basically changed the rules completely, and people started to realize, gosh, I actually was pretty productive with people that weren't in the office. And so who cares if I'm in Atlanta and they're in Atlanta? If they're not in the office, they may as well be in San Francisco or, you know, Singapore for that matter. And so it's a slow evolution. I haven't seen a major shift yet, but what I can share with you is, to answer your question specifically, the software Beeline does provide an opportunity. So for example, you're in Austin and maybe traditionally you'd look for a resource in Austin. We'll highlight, Armin, appreciate that you're looking for a project manager in this area. Would you be open to, and then we can heat map and I'll also share with you different pricing that would be corresponding to those different geographies. And conversely, there's different ways for talent to start to see the jobs. I mean, typically talent can't just log into Beeline and see all the jobs that are posted. They need to be represented through a staffing firm, or there's something in our industry called direct sourcing, which hasn't totally taken off yet, but that's where the talent can have a relationship direct to the enterprise. And in that case, Beeline does post all the positions to either public talent pool or private talent pool, however it's set up. And in that case, they can start to get visibility to the jobs that are available to them. But that's still relatively nascent. Certainly, like the Upworks of the world do work like that. But in terms of our context, it's still relatively nascent.
Yeah, when I wear my kind of, you know, user hat, if I was using the service that you're offering, I could see how, you know, valuable that insight might be for me, right? So I'm there, of course, to find the right match, either as a, you know, employer or employee or employer or contractor, either way. Right. But also on either side, what you guys have, the information and the data can be very insightful and helpful to me. So you guys definitely, I can see the potential for you guys moving forward that, you know, how helpful it can be to people. In variety of ways as you go forward. And you said, you know, you're working on those. So that's great.
Thanks.
So let's think about, for example, I mean, you mentioned about agents and digital workers, and we hear that a lot, but yet to be seen if any company come back and say, you know, I have now two digital workers instead of hiring two people. Yeah. I can understand at this age, it's still very early. These are more productivity tools, meaning that you have someone and then you have these, you know, tools in to help you to become more productive, right? So those people come in and use some of those agents and digital workers and in any way you wanted to name it. And then those would be productivity tools for them to become more productive, but yet not at the point that at least we trust to totally outsource that work to AI agent and say, yeah, you are on your own, go ahead and finish the job. And that normally takes time to gain that trust, right? It doesn't happen overnight. We talked about, we have been, you know, talking about these autonomous cars for over 2 decades now. That's right. And still, people do not trust yet to really go there and say, this is my car, take it somewhere and go and just, you know, bring back my child from school and leave the car on its own to do it. And after 25 years of showing demos of this technology, we are still at the age that I think is still we are at the early age. So we will get there, but it takes time in order to establish that trust relationship. And normally you do it step by step. Is your observation different? Have you ever seen a company says, I have 2 digital agents now, otherwise I would have hired these 2 people?
I haven't seen it yet. You and I are totally aligned. And, you know, I was on the line the other day with VRBO, right? And so I said, I need to talk to a live agent because I have a billing situation. And I got stuck in this loop that was wildly frustrating. And it's total credit to them. They ended up fixing my issue and I got a live person. But that first experience where, and they were very candid, this is an AI agent. That's great. But like, you're still not hearing me, right? And you're getting me in this loop. And so, and look, maybe it's an age thing. I'm not sure I'm going to jump in one of those cars either. I think my kids probably will. But you and I are completely aligned in that I 100% see tasks being taken away. And that will, in fact, impact jobs, right? Like, I don't see a lot of companies just wholesale firing people because agents are in there. Now, look, we've seen examples of companies firing a lot of people to take that money to invest in AI, but that's different to me. What I expect at Beeline is just more velocity, more productivity, and less errors, right? Stuff like that. But I absolutely have not seen any examples where, you know, I could point to and say, person A was completely replaced with an agent. Certainly in customer service, we're seeing part of that. But I think the smart companies are still overlaying with the human touch for the reasons like I just exemplified.
And a big portion of what you guys do, I have to imagine, that also has to do with compliances and regulations, and especially in those fields, there are expertise that people need either short term or per project that you guys can help. Does it mean that verticals or domains that maybe are more regulated or maybe have compliancy as it be, are perhaps the domains that you guys are mostly active on or more active on those domains?
Compliance is an enormous issue and one of the things that we help solve, but it's a wide swath of compliance issues. I mean, if we're talking about, let's just say nurses, and there's 20 some odd credentials that he or she need to ensure that are up to date and handle before they came and walk into a hospital. So it's at that level. When I think about Beeline, I've got to be cognizant of GDPR and right to erase and things of that nature. And you know, California has all sorts of fun things that we're going to have to play with, AB5, et cetera. And when we think about independent contractors, are you truly an IC or are you not an IC? And we have solutions. We made an acquisition recently where we help companies feel very good about whether or not that independent contractor is in fact an independent contractor, so they avoid penalties and taxes and stuff like that, and indemnify them. So when you talk about credentialing, there's a wide range of areas. Obviously, financial services are regulated highly. And so a lot of what we do is provide audits, the reporting, the analytics, et cetera, help with some of these audits. But compliance is a very big issue, both at the regulatory issue, but also even at the social level. I mean, when you think about organizations that are focused on DE&I and equal pay, this also is facilitated through the use of Beeline because we can actually capture this information on the talent.
And another question just occurred to me when I was talking to a friend. I'm not sure if this is relevant to the services you guys provide, but Americans have a lot of opportunities abroad, including this friend of mine that was talking about going to, you know, Korea, for example, South Korea, and helping on a project for 6 months. And I wonder if this is something that, you know, as part of your service now or in the future, you work cross-border, meaning that some people can in the U.S. look at it and say, these are opportunities abroad for me to go and, you know, work on this project for 6 months, or it's just within each border, the opportunities seen by people.
You're right. I mean, it's a really salient question, especially for a global organization, because you see more of that behavior in Europe than you would in the United States. Certainly, there are organizations that are providing those opportunities. But in Europe, there's a lot of cross-border opportunities that are manifested through Beeline. So, for example, if I were in Germany logging into Beeline, I wouldn't be confined just to talent in Germany. I could expand my sourcing methodology and, frankly, find talent in France and hire her for 6 months. So there's that. And then organizations are also looking at how they can transfer internals. And some organizations have looked to us to utilize the functionality to help with that to a smaller degree. But it's a big issue, right? Especially when you're challenged with the war for talent, which still exists in many verticals. How do you leverage not just externals, but how do you leverage the skills that you have inside your organization as well? So again, while we focus primarily on the extended workforce, we dabble a little bit on that side in terms of helping find skills and then opportunities and cross-border jobs.
Great. And that's a good segue to a random question I'm going to ask you now that has nothing to do with this discussion.
Okay.
You have been traveling to so many different great cities and countries. And if I ask you, can you give me, you know, the name of a city that you would recommend me to go there and just travel for the next 2 weeks? What would be that kind of your choice out of all of these great cities that you have traveled?
It's such a great question. And I always get, hey, Doug, what's your favorite X? And I always tell people, I don't play favorites because the world is so ridiculously abundant. I can't pick one or two. But I will tell you, Italy has my heart. And I'll probably get canceled in this world for saying something like that. And I love Dublin. There's so many great places. But probably if you need me to confine it, I would say the Cinque Terre or somewhere in Tuscany. I've not done Amalfi yet. So like that is just a place where I find myself to be very, very happy.
That's fantastic. Thank you very much. Definitely, yeah. I will add it to my list. And my last question for you is there any book that you could share with us, either personally you liked it or it was business-wise impactful?
Man, I've done less reading in the last year or two then, but I used to do, well, I challenged myself to do 50 books 1 year and I accomplished that. So I have been a voracious reader. I haven't in the last year or so. There's so many good ones. I think maybe that's just what I'm focused on right now. I have an employee meeting tomorrow. We have to.
By the way, I'm cheating myself. I'm just doing Audible. I don't read that many books anymore. Okay. I
consider that reading.
That counts too.
Okay, good. Look, top of my head, I could give you a list of my top 10. I got to the point where I read a book one time and I said, I think I know what's going to happen. And that was because I'd read it 5 years earlier. And so as I age, I said, I have to journal all of these. And so I started to. One of my favorites that I'm going to talk about tomorrow in the employee leading meeting is General McChrystal wrote a book called Team of Teams. And it's so good because I'm a big student of culture and to try to perpetuate great culture here at Beeline. And one of my greatest frustrations is when silos don't work cross borders, kind of to an allusion that you just made. And it's super frustrating because we're all here not to work for me, but to work for our families and to do the right thing. We all have a mission that we're going after. But yet, when I see these pockets of discord, it's wildly frustrating. And General McChrystal over in Afghanistan had special forces, all the different groups. And he had the SEALs, he had the Green Berets, and you know all the other ones. And of course, they all have pride and they're great at what they do. But he really needed to drive unity. And so he did this thing I thought was super brilliant. He found one of the best in each group. So let's say, you know, Armin, you're one of the best Navy SEALs. And so he would put you over with me and the Green Berets. And what he talks about is that the Green Berets would ignore this guy for the first couple of weeks. SEALs like, that's fine. I'll take out the trash. I'm just here to work. You know, these are highly motivated, successful guys. They're not going to sit around sucking their thumbs and getting in the fetal position. And then he talks about this notion of the Berets, and I may be mixing up the special forces, but just work with me. You know, they had to do some sort of an assault that was amphibious as well. So like, well, SEAL probably knows about that. So they brought him over and gave him all these great ideas. And here's the lesson. Because this guy did such a good job, all of a sudden this paradigm that, well, the Navy SEALs aren't bad actually. They're really good guys, right? So one guy created this new perception that SEALs are great. And then the same thing happened with all the other ones. And so he was wildly effective at bringing very competitive, highly effective, competitive teams together. And he's an amazing guy. He's done a lot for the country. So I think, you know, that's one of my favorite books, but I'd be happy to send you more. I've got a bunch of favorites.
No, that's great. Thank you very much. And also for the insight you provided and why you like that book. So that's very helpful. Thank you very much. And it has been a pleasure speaking with you, Doc. So thank you very much for joining us. And I will follow you for sure moving forward. And I wish you all the best.
Likewise. Pleasure's mine. Thanks for hosting me. It's really nice spending time with you.
Thank you for listening to SaaS Scaled with Armon Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to saasscaled.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. And be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.